Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started. Please welcome my guest this evening, Michael Cameron.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
When we come into this world, we are never truly guaranteed that we won't eventually run into a mystery of life. Michael Cameron, who is from the United Kingdom, was born in an area in the East End of London, which is in between the City of London and the Tower of London. It is an area with a dark, rich history going right back to the Roman times, and had been a hunting ground for the infamous Jack the Ripper, who brought terror to London in 1888. Michael was raised in a strict Irish Roman Catholic household, where as a baby he had been visited by strange glowing figures and had balls of light fly over his cot and through the walls. The home in which he grew up was once a schoolhouse set within the grounds of English Martyrs Junior School, which along with his childhood home belonged to the Church of Rome. It was from his childhood home and with the school and school grounds at the age of 4 years old where he would have an encounter with a flying saucer along with his brother. This incident set in motion for him a long chain of events that still continues to haunt Michael's life to this day. Michael is an active advocate for the mental health issues that abductees experience in the aftermath of traumatic abductions to highlight and bring awareness to PTSD and complex PTSD. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and relax as you come to meet a man who has lived an entire life of high strangeness, Michael Cameron. Well, good evening, Michael, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hi, Dr. Kelly. Thank you for allowing me to come on to speak to you.
Oh, it's going to be a real interesting show. I would say that this one's going to be very unique because not often do I get an opportunity to chat with those who have actually been abducted. And so I think most of us will be very curious to hear some of the stories and some of your thoughts regarding all of this today. So what I do, Michael, as always, is I usually start out very basically with all my guests because I like to establish a foundation. And so I want you to go back as far as you can remember. And I want you to try to bring us into your life a little bit by where either something paranormal happened or something extraterrestrial or whatever may have happened to you. And tell us a little bit about that experience. How young were you?
Well, my earliest memory at the time was probably at 4 years old. As I explain in my book, I grew up in a house that had been plagued by poltergeist activity. But at the age of four, though, I was actually having experiences what we now know to be, you know, the humanoid Nordic type beings. You know, the long blonde hair, the blue eyes, quite chiseled looks. And so I started to have experiences with these. I mean, one particular experience that I had was I remember going up into my room and I remember there was two of them. There was a male and a female. they were a lot taller than obviously me as a child, but a lot taller than the adults around me. I remember they used to speak to me, but not using the mouth like we do, but telepathically, I guess, at the time through the mind. And I remember sometimes they used to come and they used to play games with me, like Follow the Leader. I remember one particular game. I remember one time my mum was coming up the stairs. I detail this in my book. My mum was coming up the stairs. The door was closed. The bedroom door was closed. I'd been speaking to them, but I could hear her coming up. And I could hear her standing outside the door because the weight of her feet was, you know, as it moved, the floorboards underneath were creaking. So I knew she was outside listening. So then when she opened the door, I turned my head away from my two friends, as I call them. And I looked back towards her, and she was like looking sort of puzzled, you know, and she asked me, "Who are you speaking with?" Mm-hmm. And I just said, "My two friends." And as I turned my head back away from my mum, back to the two, my two friends, they were no longer there. Mm-hmm. And there was windows on the side, and obviously they're closed. There was no way out of the room. So I was a little bit shocked, and I didn't really understand where they'd gone. Mm-hmm. And then when I looked back at my mum, you know, she was looking at me, and she then came into the room and kneeled down beside me. And she just said, you know, "I'm sure that they'll be back." And, you know, and then she went back downstairs to do whatever she was doing. But at the time, you know, when I was having these experiences, my parents believed that I was these were invisible children that I was seeing.
Right.
But at the time, what I didn't tell them is that these were adults, and they would come quite a lot to see me. You know, and there was another time I remember where my mum was in the kitchen. She was preparing lunch. I was in the opposite room. I was playing with matchbox toys, you know, the little miniature toys.
Yes.
I remember playing with them on the carpet, you know, in my own little world playing. But then at some point, I had this overwhelming feeling in my head that I must go upstairs. I got to be upstairs. Someone's coming and I got to meet them. So at first, I didn't go straight away. I sort of, you know, just carried on playing. But then I had these impressions, strong impressions. You know, I was very sensitive as a child, as a lot of us are. You know, was able to pick up energy quite easily. I'm not always able to interpret it, what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
Just the feelings.
Question for you, Michael. Let me ask you a quick question here. Just a quick question. So,
sure.
When you're around four, and that's about right for my husband had a invisible, actually adult friend who also played Lincoln Logs with him when he was 3 years old. And he remembered that it wasn't a child. It was actually some kind of a man, right? And that never existed. Well, existed, but no one else could see. And sure. So my question to you about adults, the Nordic adults, is that... So when you looked, I know as a child, we don't really, we're not often very critical about who we're sometimes playing with, right? And so did you ever find anything, I know telepathically, did you find anything unusual about what they were dressed in? Did they look like a regular human being, solid, playing with you, or did they? Can you remember anything now that you look back at that experience about how they were physically, and when they were playing with you, how their physical demeanor looked?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, they were very athletic looking in their physiques, and they did wear, every time that I see them, they did have the, you know, the blue uniforms on, but the uniforms were very much, you know, new looking. And also they seemed to fit to their bodies quite well. You know, there wasn't no sags, you know, anywhere like that. It seemed like they were made to fit, so to speak. But you know, looking at them though, they look like perfect, you know, like perfect human beings, if there is such a thing. You know, they looked you know, they look like they could mix in with a crowd and not be, you know, you wouldn't even suspect, I guess, that they were not from here.
Do you remember at all, and this is a crazy thing to ask, but it just kind of came to me. Do you remember at all if they had any kind of a smell to them? Like, did she wear perfumes, the lady one? And was it a guy and a gal, did you say, that were together, that were playing with you? Right. Because as a kid, you're not going to pick that up. Well, you might, actually. You might pick that up and notice a particular smell. And then you always knew it was your friends because of this smell. Do you recall anything like that at all?
I don't recall with these, Dr. Kelly, with these particular two beings. I never did. The only thing that I remembered about them really was a lot of the time was their eyes, how piercing blue they were. But also, you know, and a lot of the time when they were with me, when they used to be speaking to me. But as I explain in my book, I don't remember what they said to me. I'm a very visual person. I remember images more than words. But I don't remember that. But on one particular occasion, though, as I said, I was going up the stairs. I went up to the room, and there was no one there. And then one of them appeared, and it was the male, and the female wasn't there. And he looked at me, you know, looked down at me into my eyes, and I looked up at him. And he smiled at me, and I smiled at him. But then it was like he was then... It felt like he was speaking to my mind. But as I explained my book, when I was writing the book, it didn't, when I'm looking back at the memory now as an adult, it felt like he was talking to another aspect of me. He was talking into another part of me that actually knew him, but not the me, but something else.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, the only way I can explain that, it could be an altar. Mm-hmm. You know, and also another aspect to me that's within me. If you understand what I mean, I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm just trying to understand myself what was happening at the time. You know, I don't have the answers. I can at least explain what I felt.
When did they stop coming to you? Because you're about 4 years old. So how long did they visit you for before they were not coming to you anymore?
I would say probably before I was five.
Okay.
I think something happened. You see, and I tried to explain. I'm not sure, you know, even to this day, if they were friendly or if they were foe. And the reason I say that is because when I was having these experiences with them, it felt like I entered again into an altered state of consciousness when I was with them. So it's almost like I went into a what the British researcher, Jenny Randalls, explains to be the Oz factor, where your immediate environment suddenly vanishes. It moves sort of somewhere else. And you're in this, you know, this state, you know, almost like a cocoon state where you and the other person are just in this space alone, and everything else around you vanishes. But it felt like that. But when it's almost like a trance-like state. So when I come out of this state, and this happened quite a lot when I had these interactions with these particular Nordic beings, they'd vanished. And I was left, as I explained, it's almost like when you're sleepwalking and suddenly someone wakes you up and you're thinking, where am I? And what am I doing here? It felt like that a little bit. And being a child, I was afraid because I was thinking to myself, well, something has happened. But I didn't know what's happened. And I always remember running away in fear, panicking, and going to my parents. My parents, you know, they were used to me going to them and saying to them, something's happened. Someone's, you know, I've seen somebody, someone's spoken to me, or I've seen something, you know. But with these particular beings, I'd often wonder why I would feel this particular fear, you know, but I do articulate to, it could also be being a child and being afraid of something you don't understand rather than it being something, you know, that's not good. So it could be that, but it could also be that there was something that happened that wasn't particularly positive, that I just don't remember when I snap out of this mm-hmm. trance-like state, and then I'm running away. So it could be 50-50.
Yeah. Question for you a little bit here. Okay, so one of the things that I was reading in your bio is that when you're also that young age, right, or you remember these orbs passing over you while you're, you know, in your bed or your cot, or and passing over you back and forth. So tell us a little bit about where you were. Did you say that you were living? And I don't have your notes in front of me right now. That's why I'm picking this out of my brain here. Is that where you were living, was that, did that used to be like a where a church was, or explain a little bit about where you were living, where you kept seeing these orbs fly over you all the time?
Yeah, I grew up in the East End of London, which was basically just a stone throw away from what would be the Tower of London, mm-hmm. and then the City of London. So I was bang in the middle of both of those. But I grew up in a schoolhouse in the grounds of a school, a junior school, where mm-hmm. I did attend the school itself. It was a Roman Catholic school for boys and girls. Mm-hmm. My house was actually owned by the Roman Catholic Church.
Okay.
So, but on the particular, what would be, I guess, the blueprints of the grounds of the school itself, I discovered through my research when I was writing my book, I didn't know at the time, that it has quite a dark history, where a lot of things have happened there. You know, it was actually at one time the burial ground for lepers from Roman times.
Really?
So on this particular spot where their house was built, they actually buried the lepers there, you know, that suffered from leprosy during Roman times.
Yeah.
Because on the area of London where I grew up, it was actually all Roman, you know, Roman burial grounds. It was actually a place where Julius Caesar had been, mm-hmm. where he had one of his, settlements.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of history in regards to that. It's also one of the key areas where during the Second World War, the Blitz took place. And most of London was bombed. So in this particular spot where my house was and the location of the school grounds, it was actually one of the places where it had been bombed quite a lot.
Interesting.
So, you know, and I actually found some old pictures of that as well, which was interesting.
Yeah.
About where, you know, where it was all bombed. So, and much later on as well, like now, I'd say, you know, in this year, I discovered as well that this particular area in the large school playground, there is actually, when I was living there, I don't know if it's still there now, but there was an active portal underneath that playground.
Oh, interesting.
This has been confirmed by two psychics friends of mine as well. When they've done when they've looked at this particular area, they said, yeah, you're absolutely right. I got this information from outside the body recently. I didn't have it before. I didn't know nothing about it. But it's interesting when you think of everything I experienced there.
Right.
That could have been a key element to why I was experiencing it.
Well, and portals do open and do close. And sometimes they're small and sometimes they're large. It just depends. And I don't know what might actually make them open one day and close another. But, you know, you bring up a good point there about how active it was there. But did your parents not have any experiences themselves, or did they just keep passing your experiences off as an overactive imagination?
No, both my parents had, they did have experiences. I believe my mum was an abductee. My dad was a, you know, very much, you know, nuts and bolts type of man. He'd been in the military during the World War, World War II. He'd been a flight engineer. Mm-hmm. And my mum built Lancaster bombers during the war. But she did have experiences before she went, you know, she worked in the munitions factories, you know, building these type of aircraft. And before my dad, or when my dad was in digs, he was telling me that he experienced this lady in grey, you know, that kept pulling the bed covers off of his bed, when he was trying to sleep. You see her one time floating down the stairs towards him. You know, I just thought it was interesting that she was grey as well, you know. He did at one time explain to me that he did see also when he was, you know, being the schoolkeeper, he went around the school closing up the gates, locking up, making sure everything's okay. He did see a Roman guard standing on duty. And the Roman guard didn't seem to be aware of him. So, you know, and he watched the Roman guard and suddenly it vanished, you know, but he wasn't somebody to make up stories of this sort of thing. You know, he just wasn't like that. He didn't really talk about it. Every now and again, he would say something to me, you know, just off the cuff. But, you know, my mum, when the war was going on, she was evacuated, you know, like many people, to safe areas. Like, she lived for a while in Hereford in the countryside, which was a free zone. And I remember her telling me that she woke up and she was living at the time in a barn, and there was a pet in the barn. And she remember waking up in the middle of the night, something, she felt a presence, something was wrong. You know, this feeling you get of, I know, it's like a fear sort of feeling. And she remembered seeing, she said, something creature sort of standing up almost, or from a kneeling position, I guess, from the back of the bed, the base of the bed. And she said, you know, when I asked her later on what it looked like, you know, it was a description of what would be now what we know as greys, you know, the big black eyes, you know. And she put the covers over her head and opened it, go away, you know. And then she pulled the covers down, it was still there.
Mm.
But then when she pulled the covers back over her head again, the next memory she has is morning time. So she has no recall of what happened between that time. So the whole night had passed, and then it was morning, and then she see this cow with his head stuck through the bundle. But I think she had experiences like this, but she just didn't know what they were. And also, because my mum and dad were both strict Roman Catholic, you know, they were strict Roman Catholics, and we lived in an area of London which was mostly Irish and really strict Irish Catholics, you know. My dad was friends with a lot of high-ranking members of the church, including people in the Vatican. He was a Grand Knight of Freemasonry. But with all this going on, I don't think they wanted to get the community involved. You know, I guess it's also this, you know, they didn't involve the community in regards to when we were having the poltergeist activity. But with the house itself, you know, it was my parents that told me, that, you know, when I was a child, I was in a cot, that they were starting to see the orbs were flying over my cot. This didn't happen to any of my other brothers. It only happened to me. And also they were seeing creatures, what they described as creatures, looking down at me into my cot. But when they were seeing, they looked at my parents and then they would vanish. You know, so I had some stories from my parents, but a lot of the time they didn't say too much. But a lot of the time as well, they didn't seem surprised that I was having things happen to me. You know, they would often reassure me, be okay, don't worry, you'll be okay.
You know, it's interesting. You bring up a couple good points here. So a couple things that are interesting. So number one, let me re-clarify. Did your brother, and we won't mention his name, but did your brother sleep in the same room as you? And how old was he compared to you?
My brother's 2 years older than me. And we did share, you know, in the house I grew up in, we had three bedrooms, but we did share a room together. We shared a bed together, being children. And, you know, he had some experiences with me, but as I explained, I don't know if he continued to have experiences. We're not close now. We don't talk. I've not seen him for, you know, a long time, decades now. I have spoken to him at one time when I was writing a book, which was a good, which was good because I did ask him some questions about our experiences. Did he remember them? He did remember them. He remembered where they took place. He remembered what they were without me telling him. And, you know, I think over the time, though, he did wonder, I think over time, did he imagine it? But because I was with him and I was able to bring it up to get him to recall, and he did recall. And I did say to him, one of our other brothers who are a lot older than me and him, they told me when I was writing my book, it was spoken about regularly by our parents, but just not in front of me and him. Mm. So it, you know, it wasn't looked upon as something that was our imagination.
Mm-hmm.
It was looked upon as something that did happen. And my mum asked me many, many years later, you know, as an adult, do you remember this particular time when this happened or when that happened? And I said, of course, because I can never forget that.
Are they still in that house now, or did they move?
Well, the house is the house has actually been made into classrooms for children with special learning difficulties. Because I did revisit the spot many years ago to get a feel of the place, and I was quite surprised they turned it into a classroom now. Mm-hmm. For special needs children. It just to get a feel of, you know, my memories, what took place there. It was a bit unusual going back after many, many years. But no, they're not there now. I mean, both my parents have passed now into spirit.
Okay.
So, but with my mum, though, she had other experiences in regards to the poltergeist experiences in the house. When she was alone in the house, she often heard disembodied voices calling out her name. And when she explained to me as well, when she used to be standing upstairs, you know, at the bathroom sink doing something or cleaning, she would feel something behind her. And when she looked around, there was no one there. Mm-hmm. But then when she turned back to doing what she was doing, she could hear whispers.
Mm-hmm.
And she could hear somebody calling her name. And, you know, to the point where she got bit.
Oh, she got bit.
And had to leave the room. Sorry?
Oh, that's interesting.
She got a little bit freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And she ran off, you know. She was then telling my dad, you know, there's something here, something mm-hmm. in the house. You know, there was lots of strange banging sounds at night that used to get my dad up out of bed. And as I explain it, the house that we lived in at the time, that the walls, they were solid, you know. If you were to hit them with your fist, it would just create the sound of a thud. But these sounds were echoing. You know, they were louder than what they should be when someone would hit a solid object.
Mm-hmm.
So he would come up, he would come down and investigate. There's nothing there. There was objects often moved about. They would reappear in different places, cold spots. The usual things that you have with hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't stop until my dad then asked for somebody from the church to come and bless the house. But then once they did come and they blessed the house, it seemed to have stopped for a period of time.
Right.
But it didn't stop for me, though. It went on and it went on and it went on. And a lot of the experiences weren't good.
They
wasn't good. And as I explained, I didn't ask for this. As far as I know, I didn't ask for it. Who would? But, you know, a lot of them left me with, as an adult, with trauma, you know, and it's still there. Yeah. You know, as I explain it, I explain it that my inner child is still hiding in the house somewhere, waiting to come out because it's afraid of coming out from what happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a nice feeling. That's not to say I didn't have positive experiences. I did have positive experiences, but overall, with these particular abductions, they wasn't good. They wasn't pleasant at all. And so maybe I'm lucky in some ways I don't remember it all.
When you saw this, where were you? What were your first impressions? Did anyone else see it? Because sometimes other people don't see these things unless they want to show. It's like an invitation to your awareness. they want to go to you. So bring us into that experience a little bit.
Yeah, again, it was with my brother, who's 2 years older than me. We were playing at the time outside. It was in the summer holidays. The school had closed. Mm-hmm. My parents would have been in school at the time, working with, you know, the cleaners to get the school ready for after 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we were playing football or soccer on the green, just opposite the house. And it was at that time that Sean suggested, why don't we go for a stroll around the school grounds? You know, there's no one else there. And I remember we picked up the ball, you know, and we went off down this slope hill. And we went to a particular location, which is where the school, the main school hall is, you know, where it holds the houses, the gymnasium equipment. And I mean, when we walked towards there, you know, you have the infants' classrooms. So what would be classroom one and what would be two, and then you had the school hall, and on the other end, on the opposite side, would have been the outer external toilets, and also would have been the library.
Okay.
What would have been where the library would be. So I remember Sean walking up. See, there was two concrete platforms, a staircase leading up to these platforms that then led up to the school hall. I mean, my brother went up onto one of the platforms and he was just looking around. And I remember at the time, I was actually below this particular staircase and I was kneeling down looking at red fire ants. I remember that quite clearly. And when I was looking, I was just, you know, watching them do what they do. I remember, you know, my brother then explaining or shouting out, you know, what is that? What's that? And then I remember then getting up, leaving the ants to do what they're doing. And I went up to his position and he was pointing up at the sky. And then when I followed his finger, you know, pointing up at the sky, it was a clear sky, somewhat summertime. I could see what would be, I guess now, you know, a flying saucer-shaped craft. It was a daylight disc. It was a silver metal craft. And it was glowing only because I think the sun was shining from on the metal, reflecting the sun. And it seemed to be, you know, moving like that, that way. And it seemed to be getting closer and closer to us. But what I find strange is that this was a busy working week in London. You know, there was a lot going on in the immediate outside of the school grounds on the roads. There was a lot of warehouses. There was a lot of factories, you know, so there was a lot of activity. There was also one of the main police stations that was just opposite our house. And there was always police guards going up and down with their sirens blazing and their lights, you know, flashing. And I often think, you know, did anyone else see this? You know, this particular site, this craft was getting closer and closer to us. You know, and again, we entered again into an altered state of consciousness whilst looking at this particular craft, you know, like a trance-like state. And it was in between, you know, from this position, I would say we had missing time. Because then when I suddenly snapped back to this reality, the craft had gone. And I looked across at my brother. He was still in this like zombie state, just like staring, you know, at the sky. And then it was only because I shouted his name a few times that he suddenly broke out of this. And again, like with the Nordic type beings that I encountered, I had this feeling of fear. I needed to get away from this particular spot. I needed to get a run. And from that moment then, I took off and I run, you know, and he was behind me. I remember we both, not far away from each other. He was behind me, but we wasn't far apart. And we were going running back to the house, you know, where our parents were. And I remember we were looking up at the sky to see if we could see this craft, if it was around. but we couldn't see it. But it was then that we, you know, we did speak to our parents and we explained what we'd seen something. And, you know, they were quite casual about it again. They were like, you know, it's okay. Everything will be okay. Just go outside and play, but just stay close to the house where we can see you. And nothing else was said about it then. But, you know, I did wonder if anyone did see it. I didn't wonder at the time, as being a child, I wasn't even aware of what this was. I didn't have, you know, the terminology we use now, you know, as explained, it's a daylight disc, you know, or even it's a flying saucer. But as an adult and knowing what I know now, I can now describe it better. Mm-hmm. It's what we see, you know, for me, it's just an object in the sky that happened to be silver and just strange looking because, you know, during the 1970s, there was nothing around that depicted anything of this nature. Even on British TV, we only had three channels, you know, right. You know, the children acted as the remote control.
Right.
But there was nothing. And also, you know, someone pointed out to me as well, you know, if, you know, why didn't the Jesus appear to me or the Virgin Mary, you know, because of my strict Roman Catholic upbringing. And that's all that we had in that what we had to, you know, if we wasn't in the school being taught religious education, we were at the church, mm-hmm. you know, going through masses and, you know, walking around the streets in ceremonies. It was that intense with the Catholicism, you know. So someone pointed out, you know, why wasn't you having these experiences with these particular, you know, beings? And I was having the experiences with the greys, or I was having demonic experiences or experiences with the MIBs, you know, the men in black. So that, again, there was nothing. And also with the TV, me and my brother, we wasn't allowed to watch the TV unless we had an adult with us. And what we watched had nothing to do with sci-fi or anything like that. It just, in my household, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my parents were very strict.
You know, I find it interesting. I have heard of accounts where people have seen these craft, flying saucer crafts, and the person next to them would say, "I don't see anything." And so, but you said your brother also saw this as well, correct?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And do you recall at this time, do you recall any lights around it? Sometimes people describe this as there was lights underneath it. Here are the colors that I saw. Do you remember anything along that lines on this craft?
I didn't remember that. No, I just remember it was saucer shaped. It was silver. And yeah, I don't remember nothing else about that. That's the only thing I can describe about it.
And then did you say when it took off or it left, even though it was kind of hovering there and you feel like you went through some missing time for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe the frequency of it immobilized you and your brother to a degree that you might not recognize. But did you say then, did you see it just kind of fly off or just kind of, did it move quickly out of the area once it finished whatever it was doing and in showing itself to you? Do you remember that at all?
What I remember of it is that it didn't do any of those things that I can recall. What I remember is that when we were looking at it,
mm-hmm.
we entered an altered state of consciousness.
Yeah.
So in between that time of entering this particular space and looking at this craft, I would say something happened in between that we don't recall. So then when we then moved away from this particular state, what we were in, the craft had then gone. Mm-hmm. It was no longer there, but I would say something happened to me and him mm-hmm. in between that time of watching it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would say that we had missing time then.
Mm-hmm.
So something, you know, I felt that, and he felt that as well. Something had happened that we didn't recall.
Mm-hmm.
We just recall something, you know, the craft had gone. But mm-hmm. something most definitely happened in between that time.
So when you have these types of experiences, people often report that then they have more experiences. And then sometimes they feel like they're being stalked by these experiences. Like they'll never go away because for some reason they recognize you, or they'll always want to be around you for some reason. So after this moment occurred, did you ever see another craft again, or did you start to notice more activity or unusual things happening in your life?
A lot of the craft I experienced much later on was out of body experiences. And, you know, as I explained, with a lot of the abductions that take place, they do actually take out, they take place outside of the body. You know, when you've had, you know, looking back at some of the abduction encounters in the 50s or 60s, where they're removed from the car, they see themselves rising up through the screen into a craft whilst they're looking back at themselves sitting immobilized in the car. So that's an out-of-body experience. We know that these particular beings have technology that can move the astral body out of the physical body by using this particular technology, so that they can abduct you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to correct somebody a little while ago on a podcast that I did, when they told me that they have a lot of abductees come onto the show that have positive experiences. Well, you know, I had to explain what abduction means, because abduction, you know, is kidnapping, basically. You've been taken by force. I've not given my consent. As a child, I've not given my consent. And as an adult, I don't give my consent to these experiences. So if you look in any dictionary, that will it will explain what that is. And it's never a positive experience. So, you know, if you're having a positive experience, it's not an abduction. If anything, it'd be more in the lines with a contactee.
Yeah,
which are normally more benevolent. You don't undergo these type of unpleasantness, and you know, and no one should. You know, if you're having a positive experience, that's fantastic. You know, that's good. But abduction must be defined in the correct way for people that are having these experiences, because otherwise it downplays it, and I think it creates more trauma for the people that have these experiences. You know, it's in the same way, you know, of a child being forcibly removed or pushed into a car. Well, that's an abduction. It's not a good experience.
Yeah.
You know, so in the same way, a lot of abductions often take place at night. They take place in isolated areas, you know, whether you're in a car or in your bedroom. I find most of them take place now. Probably not later in the 50s and the 60s. They seem to be more taken away from vehicles. But, you know, now I seem to think it's more from the bedroom. For me, I get taken a lot from the bedroom, you know, and it's from not in the physical sense. It's from out of the body. Mm-hmm. So I come out of my body. But just to... But I've always been able to do that, even as a child, of being able to leave my body easily and travel, you know, everywhere, really. As a child, I was able to manifest things. I could think about them, and then they would appear eventually 2 days, 3 days later. You know, I was able to, I guess, remote view. I didn't know what the terminology was for that. As a child, I was able to see things. I was tested at one time because I was able to move objects with my mind through telekinesis. So I remember being taken by the white men in white coats somewhere and being tested, but I don't know what the outcome of that was. I just know that I had to demonstrate this ability to these particular adults. I don't know why that happened or who they, if they belong to an hospital or somewhere else. I don't know, but I just know that I had those abilities. I've not been able to do it since, but I was able to do it as a child.
Are you talking about telekinesis?
Yes. Yeah, I just knew that, you know, I didn't sort of know, you know, consciously. I guess it just came to me at some point when I was doing something. I was able to, you know, move my hand in a particular way. And something would then, a solid object would move towards me. You know, and I was quite shocked to learn I could do that. I don't know if my brothers could do it. I don't know how I did it. I can tell you that it actually, I could do it. And I then began to show my parents I could do this. You know, I think they were a little bit surprised at that. But it was then after a few attempts of doing that in front of them, I don't know how it happened, but I remember that these men come to my house and I was taken somewhere. I remember there was two or three men, they had white lab coats, and they were asking me questions about, you know, how I did this. And I used to explain to them, I don't know how, it just happens.
Right.
And I remember I was tested, and I showed them that I could do it anyway, but I don't know what the results of this test was or where that information went. I mean, I was explaining to another person, I was going to look back to see if I could find it in my medical records, but I think they destroy your medical records now. But I think that information went somewhere to be tested. It's just a shame. It's a shame, really. As I explained, it's a shame my parents didn't open up more about things to me, you know. And now they're gone, so I can't really get that information from them unless I contact a medium.
Yeah.
Try it that way.
Telepathically.
Our service was established just after the Second World War. And I discovered that it was actually set up to track bloodlines, to track children with specific psychic abilities.
Okay.
So that is the true history of this particular elf service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those hidden things, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was also a project which was called Project Talent,
mm-hmm.
which looked for children with specific abilities, you know, and these abilities were then used in military programs.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, for anyone listening, that's something to, you know, if you're interested, to go and research.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find some interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that, you know, particular children are tracked and monitored and used against their will on these particular programs and projects,
mm-hmm.
for nefarious purposes, you know.
Yeah.
And that still goes on to this day, you know. There's a lot of stuff that happens in the background that the public just are not aware of.
Oh yeah.
You know, even people within these communities are not aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
But it does go on. Children are still taken, adults are still used, again, against their will.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be stopped. The only way of, you know, the only way of getting a foothold on this is to bring it to the awareness of people, to the public,
mm-hmm.
to let them know, you know, that there's a lot of activity which involves the military that's not good. Well, I have burn marks on my body, which have appeared over time. I have one on my left thigh, which is, you know, it burnt so deeply, it left, you know, it burnt through the tissue, basically. And this was looked at in a hospital, in an emergency room. And the only thing, I'll tell you what happened. I was basically at work one night. I was walking home. Nothing untoward happened. As far as I know, I was with three other people. And then when I got home, it was, you know, it was quite a hot night. And I lay on the sofa instead of going to bed. I fell into a deep sleep. And then, you know, when I woke up in the morning, nothing odd. But then, you know, I was still dressed at the time. I got undressed and took a shower. When I was in the shower, I noticed then that I had a huge hole in my leg. It was bleeding. It was sore. I didn't know how it got there. It wasn't there the day or the night before. And, you know, when I got out of the shower, I got dressed. I wasn't able to walk. My leg was so painful. I went to the local emergency room and I was seen by the doctors there, and they looked at it and they were questioning me about it, you know, and it was so big. You could put in literally two fingers into the hole. And when you look at it, it looks like two fingers
mm-hmm.
have been pushed into it, but burning hot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the doctors said to me, this looks like a wound where you've been burnt by a laser. And he said to me, but I can't understand it. He said, because you were wearing jeans, it would have gone through your jeans and you would have been screaming. He said, doesn't matter if you're in deep sleep, you'd have woken up, you'd be screaming. He said, anyone would. He said, but when I'm looking at it, that's what it looks like to me, a laser. Mm-hmm. And he said, but obviously it can't be that, can it? Mm-hmm. And so he never could tell me what it was. He was just wanted to, you know, bandaged it up. And I never found out what it was, but it just seems strange that that happened. And I've still got the scar to this day, you know, and when I touch it, I can feel it, how deep it was. Mm-hmm. But then a few weeks later, I had a similar burn mark below this one, but it wasn't as deep and it wasn't as bad. So that eventually faded away. I've woken up and I've had burn marks on my ankles that have been really, really bad, you know. Again, there's no reason why I would have them. They appear overnight. But as for the implants, I mean, I remember a friend of mine at one time saying to me, I didn't know you had a tattoo on your back.
Oh.
And I said, I don't have a tattoo on my back. And they said, no, they said, you have, you've got a tattoo on your back. And I said, I haven't. Anyway, I told them to take a picture of it. And they took a picture of it, but it didn't come out.
Yeah.
So I asked them to describe it, and they described it to me. But what I discovered later on is it could have been what is known as an holographic one, you know, implant. Mm-hmm. That is that I've not seen many people with these, but I have discovered that they do exist. Mm-hmm. And they're placed on the skin, but they can be seen at a certain time in a certain angle, you know, when the light, something hits it, or you look at it, you know, almost like a shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing, you know, when you looking at it in a certain way. And I, you know, they don't believe me to this day. Mm-hmm. You know, they thought that I had something there. It actually, what the image of it was depicted from Sumerian times.
Mm-hmm.
So the image was of some character from Sumerian times. Mm-hmm. That was very well known in history.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea why I would have something like that on my back.
Do you still have that on your back?
You know what? I've not looked, but as I said, they did take a picture. And in that time, I was with them. They took a picture. They wanted to show me because, you know, I was like totally astonished. I didn't know what they were talking about. And when they showed it to me, it was nothing there whatsoever. I mean, but I have had strange things like that, though, happen with photographs.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time I was living in Glastonbury in Somerset in England, you know, and I was looking at my iPad. And I had a picture of the, you know, like Sedona and some of the mountains there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked, you know, when I looked again at this particular picture, there was a flying disc, mm-hmm, on top of the mountain. That when I took the picture for the screensaver, it had not been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, where the hell did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then when I looked again, I wanted to do a screenshot. You know, I thought, I've got to show this to someone. Because I had the original, you know, and I had that. And when I took a picture, the disc was no longer there.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I thought, what happened there? You know? But strange things like this happen to people like us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bizarre, you know. You get these strange things happening all the time. And you, a lot of the time, you're not even thinking about it. It just happens, these strange occurrences. I was going to say about the implants, though, something happened to me in a different area. It's not mentioned in my book. Can I share that with you?
Sure, go ahead.
I remember on this particular day, I was having a wash at the washhand basin. I was in a different area. I wasn't in London though. I was in a different area, but close to London. And, you know, it's just a normal day. Got up, having a wash. And then suddenly something fell out of my mouth.
Hmm.
It was a tiny, very tiny, you know, very, very miniature object.
Okay.
It was a metal type. It felt metal object. Hmm. It was a perfect square.
Okay.
And then I was thinking to myself, where did that come from? You know, it wasn't there before. And then it fell out. Anyway, I looked at it through a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
And I could see that it had symbols on it and it had wires on it, little wires. you know. And it was, I didn't know what it was. I put it away. And then I contacted a UFO researcher who lived close by. And I just said to him, you know, chatted briefly. And he asked me to come over to his house, which was his office as well, acted as his office upstairs. So I went over to him and, you know, he asked me a little bit about myself. I told him a little bit about abductions and stuff and how, what, you know, how this fell out of my mouth. Didn't know what it was. Yeah. He had a much more powerful magnifying glass. And, you know, he said, you're absolutely right. He said, there's symbols on it. And he said, it has these little wires on it. Hmm. And he said, it's really odd. And, you know, he said to me that he had a friend in the Ministry of Defense who would like to have a look at it. He might be able to give me or him more information to give to me. So, you know, at the time, I guess I was a little bit naive, you know. I handed it over. I wouldn't do it now, you know. And, you know, I think you know what's coming. I never got it back.
I was going to say, he told me, they didn't get it back, did they?
No. But the thing is, though, he told me, you know, a little later on, he told me that he looked for this person to ask him, and the person had been moved from this particular place, mm-hmm. along with this object. Mm-hmm. So there was obviously something in it, but only this particular researcher, though, you know, he had seen, he had his own experiences of seeing triangular craft, I believe. But he told me once, when I went to his house, he told me, opposite his house, there was an empty house. His bedroom was basically, you know, opposite to one of these other windows. And he said to me, when you look up at that house, what do you see? And I was looking at it, and I said, white net curtain? And yeah, what else? And then I could see a laser shining through from the net curtain to his window. And I said to him, yeah, I can see that. And he said, that's MI6. He said, they watch me all the time. They're watching me. And this house has been broken into numerous times, and the police have been called for a burglar. And they did find listening devices in his house, the place. So, you know, and this guy had been watched all the time by the military because of his research and into, I guess, you know, UFOs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the time, I mean, this was in the 1990s.
And this was after
that this happened.
And this was after that object came out of you. Did you feel it come up your throat, or did it just like pop out of your mouth?
Nothing. Nothing. It just fell out of my mouth. It just fell out. It's only lucky that I had the plug, or, you know, the plug in. Otherwise, it would have gone down. I wouldn't sing it. But it suddenly dropped into the water, and I picked it up, and it was like a perfect square. It had symbols on it. I couldn't determine what the symbols were, but it definitely. And he had wires on it, and he see the wires as well. And he, you know, to me, that seems like it could be an implant of some sort.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What else would it be with wires? I don't know. But mm-hmm. but it's just, again, then that would then, and I wouldn't suggest that has anything to do with aliens. I would say that's more military, more human.
Yeah.
To me, you know, human tech.
Interesting.
So, you know, I mean, we do know, you know, we do know that the Greys have made treaties with the United States military. We know this. This has taken place. It's now, you know, I'm pretty sure most people in these communities know the story about that.
Yeah.
The Greys and the exchange of technology for, you know, picking up various people. You know, and these, you know, and some people say that the Greys are good and they're benevolent and they have human interests at heart. I can assure you they do not. Have, you know, we know that there are other type and species of Greys, you know, and perhaps some of these do not do abductions, but the abduction phenomena, the programs are run, they're not run by the Greys, but the Greys act on the behalf of others to do their dirty work. But, you know, the Greys are not good, they don't care, and a lot of abductees' testimonies will testify to this fact that they suffer at the hands of the Greys. They're taken by force. They undergo various experiments, and none of it's good. You know, when you're being forced to, you know, when you're forced to take part in these particular activities, that's not fun. That's not nice. I mean, if they're benevolent, then come and greet us as human beings, you know, face to face, and ask permission You know, you don't. Otherwise, to me, you know, you're just an insidious being going around doing your dirty stuff in the middle of the night when no one can see you.
Right. And if people want to get a hold of you in any way, what's the best route for people to contact you?
I mean, you can contact me on Facebook. A lot of people tend to go there to speak to me, or, you know, contact me for research purposes. So it's Michael Cameron with a K. And yeah, you can find me on Messenger as well.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. And we'll have you back once you get that second book done. How's that?
Thank you, Dr. Kelly, for having me on.